Well, today we're concluding a message series called Friends, and the title of today's message is Faithful Friends. And in teaching this series, I've not done this in so much a linear way, but more of a circular way, where I'm circling back to certain concepts, circling back to certain scriptures, even not just repeating the same stuff, but trying to put layer upon layer in these concepts. And here's the big idea in the series, and here's the big idea in today's message. You ready? Here it is. Good friendships, they empower, and they are worth the effort. Good friendships add value to our lives, and no matter how strong we may be on our own, you will be stronger through friendship. You were made for friendship because you were created in the image of God, who is eternal friendship. The Father, the Son, the Spirit, the Holy Trinity exists in eternal friendship love. Now, when you're younger, you're all about friends. Am I a friend? Do I have friends? Who are my friends? Who's my best friend? Sometimes as we age a little bit, because maybe we get married or we have kids and then we have a career, sometimes we start to think of friendships as more of a decoration. But listen, the Bible is very, very pointed that isolation is not good for us and that it is to our advantage to pursue meaningful friendships. They add value to your life. You, in turn, add value to the lives of others. Sure, they take some effort. Sure, at times you have to push through the awkwardness, but good friendships are worth the effort. There's a classic passage of Scripture in the Old Testament. We've touched on it, but I want to come back to it. From Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning verse 9. Two are better than one. Let me just state that again. Two are better than one. You're going to see the word two three times in this passage. Two are just better than one because they have a good return for their labor. In other words, there's a mutual effort here. And when you hook up, when you get together with a like-minded person and you work together and you multiply your efforts, you get the best long-term results. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help him up. Mutual support. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And we say, well, you just turn up the thermostat. That's how, when you're alone, you keep warm, right? But in an ancient culture, how do you do it? And listen, don't think physically. How can one person stay spiritually warm? How can one person stay emotionally warm alone? Two are just better than one. And though one may be overpowered, two can quickly defend themselves. And now this unusual phrase, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And I think what he means here is when God is actually a part of a relationship, not just in a decorative way on the shelf, but when the Lord is actually a part of a friendship, that friendship is not easily broken. Friendships are good for you. And it is important that we acknowledge, particularly in the areas of our hurts and hang-ups and habits, how important it is to get outside energy, outside support, outside wisdom helping us. This is the genius of recovery groups. This is the genius of support groups. This is the genius of Celebrate Recovery, where we just acknowledge, look, we all need some help. We all need some cheerleading along the way. Two are just better than one. You say, well, I don't have a drug problem. I don't have an alcohol addiction. No, but you have got, we all have hurts, hang-ups, and habits. You might be addicted to negativity. You might be addicted to gossip. You might be addicted to cynicism. Two are just better than one. And I know it sounds so macho and cool and self-reliant to say, no, I'm the Lone Ranger. Two are just better than one. And you're not going to stay warm, and you're not going to have the support, and you're not going to have the strength unless you lean into a sense of community and friendships. Good friendships, they just empower, and they're worth the effort. You know, the basis of this series has been that wonderful friendship between David and Jonathan in the Old Testament. David and Jonathan had some similarities and some dissimilarities. Jonathan was the firstborn son of a king. And by all expectations would be next to become the king of Israel. David was the last born son of a farmer. But get this. They were both men of action. They were both strong-willed, not self-willed, but strong-willed. And they were both completely and totally sold out for God. And something happened to knit their souls together. Let's circle back to the narrative. 1 Samuel 18. After David had finished talking with Saul, that phrase is important. Jonathan gets to eavesdrop in on David's heart. This is right after his episode with Goliath. And Jonathan gets to hear David explain his heart, his passion, his energy, his love for God. And he says, that resonates with me. Your vision is my vision. And Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. And from that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. In other words, up until this time, David had been a part-time employee. But now, after becoming a battlefield legend, he's a full-time employee. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And you know what a covenant is. It's that willful decision to go deeper in a relationship and a friendship. It's saying, this relationship means something to me. It's what these two families did today when they became members here. They said, we're not going to treat our relationship with you in a cavalier or casual way. We're members in this church. We're raising the bar from convenience to commitment. Did you read the story of the guy in Germany who bought a first-class plane ticket on Lufthansa Airlines from Munich to Zurich? Fully refundable, fully changeable. He had no intention of ever flying, but he loved the Lufthansa first-class lounge. And so he, for 33 straight days, he goes to the airport, he checks in, he goes through security, he goes to the Lufthansa first-class lounge. Free food, free drink, massages, business center. At the end of the day, changes the ticket, you know, fully changeable, comes back the next day. 33 days. And finally, Lufthansa says, that's enough. What was the guy? He was a user. That's what he was. He was a user looking to work the system. Jonathan says, David, I'm not looking to use you. We're not going to be rivals. We're going to be friends. And Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing, gave it to David along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow and his belt. This is Jonathan declaring, look, I know I'm the crown prince. I know people think I'm going to be the next king of Israel. That's not true, David. I see that God's hand is upon you. You need to be wearing the attire of the crown prince. Listen, and Jonathan, he didn't just accept this. He embraced it and he celebrated it. Leonard Bernstein was once asked, what's the most difficult instrument to play in the orchestra? He said, second chair. Second chair. He said, second chair anything. He said, I don't have any trouble finding first chair. Folks who will play the flute, the clarinet, the trumpet, etc. But finding someone who can play second chair well. Jonathan says, that's my assignment. And if I could write the future, David, you would be king and I'd be your VP. And this was a friendship that lasted even beyond Jonathan's death, where David showed great friendship and kindness to Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth. All right, let's make this practical. I've got 2 points today. You say you're just now getting to your first point? Yeah, all that was intro, okay? Point number one. Here you go. This will move quickly. Pursue spiritual friendships above all. Pursue spiritual friendships above all. Social friendships are great and good, and we have a number of them, and that's wonderful. And every spiritual friendship begins at the shallow end of the pool. But pursue spiritual friendships, and here's the way I define a spiritual friend. This is somebody who helps you pay closer attention to God. Just like Jonathan and David were helping one another pay closer attention to God. Spiritual friends will traffic in grace and truth. And sometimes a spiritual friend might say to you something that you really don't want to hear. Not in a condemning way, it's just truth. But faithful are the wounds of a friend. And I hope that you will be a spiritual friend and you will give others permission to be that to you, to help you pay closer attention to God. Now, there's a scripture in the Old Testament from Proverbs 13. He that walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm. boys and girls, your parents are so very interested in your friends for this very, very reason. Because he who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools, it's just true that at some level our friends influence the direction and the quality of our lives. I'm not trying to be mean, but anyone who's gone through any kind of a life rebuilding process, one of the first things a counselor will tell you that there may be some relationships that you need to get away from for a while because they are triggers to bring you right back into that behavior you're trying to escape. All right. Now, I've got four important questions as we apply this because I want you to see some new possibilities in your future if you'll take some specific actions. Four important questions. Here's the first one. Will you acknowledge Jesus Christ as your best friend ever? That old song is so true. There is not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No one will ever love you more deeply or more thoroughly than Jesus Christ. No one will ever do more for you than Jesus Christ. And every friendship that we enjoy here on earth, it is but a taste and a hint of the kind of friendship that Jesus offers us. He loved us so much, he went to the cross for us. He tasted spiritual death in our place so that we might be fully and completely and to the uttermost reconciled with God. Like a good friend, he places our interests over his. Like a good friend, he wants what's best for us. And like a good friend, he will never, ever leave you nor forsake you. And even though you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you need fear no evil because he is with you. Here's my second question. Will you raise the bar on your friendship effort? What will it take to move you out of the stands and into the game? Because you can. You can overcome that friendship inertia. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, I'd love to have a couple of good friends. I'd love to be a friend. But if I could just go to Amazon Prime and one-click this thing, that would be my preference. Listen, there is an element of mystery in building friendships. But there are some things you can do to open yourself up to those possibilities. Now, you can just be passive and see what happens. But if you'll be proactive and take initiative and start to walk by faith and prayer, I believe you'll see God bring about some good things in your life. Because most good friendships begin as we simply pass through life and meet people who are going in the same direction. Now, here in our church, I really want you to build good friendships with one another. How do you do that? Well, just come on in. Participate. Come in on Sunday morning, be here, talk to others. Come up on Sunday night. You say, well, Ronnie, you don't have a Sunday night service. Come on up anyway. Just come on in and just see who shows up, all right? We're having a wedding here. Come on up to the wedding. You say, well, I'm not invited. Come on anyway. You just take initiative, be proactive, put yourself in environments and places. You know, we have connection groups here, small groups. That's simply our way of trying to jumpstart some friendships with people who are going in the same direction. Now, you can be passive, but if you'll take initiative and walk by faith, I think you'll see some good things happen as you start to build friendships based on shared values and similar life goals. Let me also encourage you, as you raise the bar on your friendship effort, to start asking questions of people. Sometimes you're around somebody and you've known them socially, but just hey, tell me about yourself. What do you like to do for fun? What makes you tick? What's important to you? How are you doing? And they're going to say, fine. And then you add a couple of words. How are you doing? For real. How are you doing for real? Because if you want to talk, I'm happy to listen. Or, listen, later today, I'm going to be praying. In fact, I can say that to people and say, that's actually part of my job, you know. So later today, I'm going to be praying. Might I pray for you? If so, how? I'd be happy to. You can do this. And, you know, just ramp up the openness level a little bit. It's amazing to me how many people will walk into a group of people and just not speak. Everybody can say hi. Everybody can say goodbye. Everybody can say thank you. Everybody can smile. Everybody say hi, Ronnie. Yeah, you can do this. This is good. You can walk into a group. You don't have to tell a story. You don't have to impress everyone with witty banter. But as you acknowledge people, now all of a sudden, and listen, I'm not teaching you this just so you will be surrounded and be voted most popular. I'm teaching you this for the sake of the gospel and for the sake of ministry so that you might be the light of the world and the salt of the earth and have opportunities to let the story of Jesus Christ go from you to another person. Thirdly, very quickly, will you help our church create friendship opportunities? In my opinion, many churches are overmanaged and undernurtured. And in my opinion, many churches are very well educated, and that's good, but under-fellowshipped and under-friendshipped. I hope you'll think not just in terms of sitting in rows, but also think in terms of sitting in circles from time to time, where you're with a group of people that's small enough to discuss and pray and talk and learn about one another. And you know, sometimes our friendship list might even get reshuffled a bit for the sake of ministry. And the classic example of this would be the apostles, who had the best small group experience ever because they had the best small group leader ever. But there came a time when they looked at one another and they said, you know what, guys? We've had a great run here. We've had a great run. And we wouldn't be who we are without this wonderful experience that we've shared. But it's time for us to create some friendship connections, not just our apostle group, be friendly, but create, for the sake of ministry and the gospel, to create some new connections. Will you acknowledge Jesus as your best friend ever? Will you raise the bar on your own friendship effort? Will you help us as a church create more friendship opportunities, not just be friendly, but create more friendship connections? And last of all, will you treasure and protect your friendships? I mean, there are some hardball issues when it comes to friendship. Let's not romanticize this. Sometimes with a friend, feelings get hurt. Egos get bruised. Parenting styles differ. There's a price to pay for friendship. And there are awkward seasons to navigate. I urge you to go the extra mile in protecting your friendships. Some of you might need to really lean into that 1 Corinthians 13 kind of love that says love's not going to be easily angered and easily offended. Some of you might need to re-embrace the counterintuitive teachings of Jesus where he tells us to make as a default the willingness to bless and forbear and forgive one another. I close with a little story I told 5 weeks ago. I'm coming back to it. Two friends were walking through a desert. During some point of the journey, they had an argument, and one friend slapped the other on the face. And the one who got slapped was hurt, but without saying anything, he knelt down and he wrote in the sand, "Today, my good friend slapped my face." Well, they kept on walking until they saw an oasis, and there they decided to go for a swim. And the man who had been slapped got stuck in the mire, started to struggle, and started to drown. But his friend, the one who had slapped him earlier, saved his life, saved him from drowning. And the one who had been slapped and had been saved went over to a large rock, and he carved in the stone these words, "Today, my good friend saved my life." And the friend who had done the slapping and the saving said, "Now, after I hurt you, you wrote in sand, and now you write on a stone. Why?" And his friend said, "When someone hurts us, we should write it in the sand so that the winds of grace and forgiveness might blow it away and erase it. But when a friend has done something good for us, we should carve it in stone so that it never gets erased." Not everybody in this room is called to be married. Not everybody in this room, thusly, will have children. But everyone in this room can pursue friendship. I hope you'll know the joy of being a friend and having friends, particularly that spiritual friend who helps you pay close attention to God. Good friendships, they empower, and they are worth the effort.